Teachers Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Naylor's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Today on Naylor's Netter, I'm talking to Amy Sayer about her book, Supporting Staff Mental Health in Your School. Amy is a secondary teacher of philosophy and ethics in Chichester. She's been teaching 13 years and she's a trained mental health first aider. Hello, Amy.
Hey there.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad on such a windy and wet, horrible day.
Yeah, we've chosen the best day to do a podcast.
Yeah, we have.
So, I like to just start all the podcasts really with asking people to tell us a bit about themselves.
No worries. So, so I've been teaching philosophy and ethics for 13 years. And I'm really lucky to work at a school where there is a really open and honest kind of dialogue about mental health. And lots of teachers that really care about it. And we have lots of student support for mental health as well. So I'm really lucky to work where I am. And I think lots of kind of stories, horror stories about mental health really make you reflect on how your school does things differently and how things can be better, I guess. So yeah, I love my school and I'm really looking forward to going back in September.
Yeah, same. So, what was your motivation then for writing this book?
So, I did the mental health first aid course with a number of my colleagues, and it was just really eye-opening. And lots of people kind of on the course and the instructors of the course were really open and honest about mental health. And it kind of made me realise that there needed to be more of a dialogue in our school and a system to support staff mental health, because what we're really good at and what lots of schools are really good at is supporting student mental health, but often staff aren't trained to look after their own mental health and to understand kind of what to ask for in terms of support and what to say to people if they are struggling. So doing the course was really eye-opening, and then the more I started to look at kind of the statistics about how many teachers are leaving the profession because they don't feel that they're supported with their mental health. And just generally kind of what was going on in the world at the moment, I guess, not to do with Corona, but just generally how people, there's kind of been a change about how people are prepared to talk about any mental health issues they're having. And so it kind of just made me think, right, I think something needs to be done about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the world right now and Corona, I think mental health is going to be probably kind of at the forefront of lots of leaders' minds when we go back. So why do you think the book is particularly important now?
As I said, when I did the mental health first aid course, we were looking at kind of some statistics about kind of mental health in the general population. And then it got me thinking, well, hang on a minute, what's going on in teaching? Because it seems to be a situation where we've got more teachers leaving than ever before because of kind of not being able to cope, as in the school isn't giving them the right support to cope with the issues that they're facing. We know that there's a recruitment problem for teachers at the moment. So there was a survey that was done by the NUT and they found that 79% of schools have problems recruiting teachers. There's something going on in the system where not only are we not recruiting teachers, but we're not keeping the ones that we've got. And when we start to look at kind of the support services that are available for teachers, like education support is fantastic. It's got a 24/7 hotline for teachers to use. Actually, it's all school staff, not just teachers. And when you start to look at the numbers of teachers calling for those sort of support services and how that's increased, it was something like 28% increase over the last few years. So more and more teachers are needing this support. And actually, when you start to think about how you can come up with a whole school kind of strategy and ethos change, just I'd seen what we could do in our school and kind of work with other people in other schools. And I just thought that it was really important that schools had like a framework that they could refer to. Because I think it's quite a scary thing to take on, looking after staff mental health in schools. And it comes with a lot of stigma attached. It comes with a lot of awkwardness potentially. And I think schools just really need kind of a go-to guide to pick up and go, right, okay, this is the sort of colleague that I've got working with me. This is kind of what's going on for them. What can we do as a school to support them? So I think it was just the fact that the more and more I looked at the different kind of sources for statistics about the topic, the worse it kind of got. And I just thought, that's not okay, because people that love teaching deserve to be able to stay in that profession, even if they are having a period of mental ill health. And there are loads and loads of horror stories where schools basically either push people out if they talk about their mental health, or it just can humiliate and I guess undermine people when they're really, really struggling. But it doesn't have to be that way. So I kind of wrote the book as a way to hopefully give schools a bit of a toolkit to use, and some real life case studies of colleagues that I know have had support and that have stayed in the profession because of it.
Yeah, I think one of the statistics that kind of jumped out at me in the book was that 76% of teachers have suffered physical or mental symptoms of stress, and that 47% of professionals with those symptoms will be absent for more than a month. So it's actually a bigger problem, isn't it? The knock-on effect of mental health is significant for schools, especially if you're thinking about things like trying to improve teaching and learning. Well, you want your school, don't you? You want to support them. So what kind of things do you think that schools can do to support colleagues?
Yeah, so I guess under the Equality Act, there is this kind of phrase which is used, which is called reasonable adjustments. And it is a kind of guidance that schools are able to offer teachers a certain amount of support to help them to get better, to help them to have time to get better, and that they're deserving of that. And I think what's really scary is that not many teachers have heard about reasonable adjustments and how it can work for them. So examples of reasonable adjustments would be, a colleague has come to you saying that they are struggling with anxiety and depression, and that they have got weekly therapy sessions, and they can only have them at a certain time because that's the only slot their therapist has. They might need perhaps an afternoon off to do that. That would be a reasonable adjustment to make, because you know it's not going to be forever. It shows the staff member that you care, because you genuinely do, because you're giving them that time. And you're not expecting them to come back to school afterwards, because, you know, therapy can be really tricky and upsetting. And it's pretty unlikely that someone would be able to come back to a class of 30 children and do what they need to do. So it's about kind of giving staff members time, and reasonable adjustments. You know, it wouldn't be reasonable to have, you know, weeks and weeks off without any contact with the school. That's not reasonable. It's got to be sort of within the best interest of the children as well. So kind of with that as a kind of factor to consider. So it might be that, you know, if someone is put on a new type of medication for anxiety and depression, that they're allowed to come into school slightly later some days. Or it's about working with doctors as well, because I think doctors are really quite good at giving space for people to recover and to get themselves better. But it's about whether schools kind of honour that. So, you know, there's, you know, doctors could write on your medical certificate that you are doing reduced duties for a set amount of time. It's not infinite, it's just while you're getting better. They could do reduced hours. So as I say, you're starting a bit later or finishing a bit earlier. And there's ways that you can look after staff. I'm saying that, and that's a practical solution. In the background, there needs to be kind of this ethos about it is okay to talk about mental health. And that has really got to come from the leadership team of a school. They've got to believe that it is okay to be honest, and it is okay to be vulnerable sometimes, and to have the right kind of toolkit about what to say. Because I think a lot of the time we're really, really good, particularly with children, I guess, kind of giving them sympathy and being like, oh, you know, like, it's going to be okay, like, you can get through this. Actually, if someone's struggling with their mental health, that isn't going to help at all. In fact, it's probably going to have a detrimental effect. So it's about showing empathy in the conversations that you're having with staff and genuinely giving them the space to listen, because I think schools are so busy and, you know, staff are not trained counsellors, but there needs to be a space to be able to say, I am struggling, without there being any judgment or fear. Because if someone's struggling with their mental health, they're probably feeling quite ashamed of that, particularly teachers. You know, we're expected to be really resilient and all the time come up with a solution to problems. Actually, sometimes there just isn't a quick fix. So it kind of needs to be, you know, within the whole school ethos, also teachers and school staff being aware of what those reasonable adjustments are to support them.
Yeah, and you talk in the book about that not everybody will come out and say that they're struggling. There might be other signs that they're struggling. So, for example, it might be that they're overeating or undereating. It could be that they're kind of joking to cover up that they're struggling. So what would you say are the best ways to kind of start conversations with staff if you think that there might be an issue?
I guess that before the conversation is even happening, it's about investing in relationships with staff, isn't it? So you care about them enough to know if they're having a change in behaviour, and that you'd notice that, and that you're not scared to have those conversations. Because if you care about the people you work with, you will notice if something's changing. So like they're not coming in the staff room at lunchtime with you to have a chat, you know, as normal, or like they're not going to their exercise classes as normal, or you know, you notice them looking quite tearful or quite sad a lot of the time. And if you work with someone and you really care about them, you'd want to have the conversation. So I think it's obviously a bit trickier if you're a line manager, because the danger is it can come across as being kind of a conversation is questioning their performance rather than questioning that you actually care. So I guess you know you could start somewhere along the lines of you know, I've noticed you have seemed a bit more quiet than usual, you know, is everything okay? It's about having that conversation in an appropriate place. Like, you know, you don't pick a busy corridor full of the children and other teachers to have that conversation, or in the busy staff room. Like, there needs to be the time and the space to have those conversations, and there needs to be the time and space for them to be able to say, do you know what, it's not okay at the minute and I think I need some help but I don't know what to do, and that's all right. But there needs to be kind of training going on in school so that all leaders know how to respond to that conversation. You know, like, it's not okay to just give them a cup of tea and a box of tissues and let them have a cry and then, you know, they won't come back the next day because they struggled so much. It's about kind of having that day-to-day support, and it might be that they want to check in with someone each day, you know, just at the start of each day to say, yeah, do you know what, I'm doing all right today, but I might need a hand with this part of the day, and just keeping that dialogue open so that they don't feel ashamed of their mental health, because that is going to be the thing that will stop them getting help.
Yeah, it kind of leads on to my next question, really, because I was going to ask about the stigma around mental health and whether you think it's getting better or if you think it's still there.
It's a tricky one, because I think we are still living with the legacy of you know, grandparents that were surviving from World War II that have this kind of stiff British upper lip, you know, like, we're not going to talk about our feelings because that's not okay. And you know, if you're showing any sort of sign of emotion, that is weakness. And that's tricky, because that has come about from, you know, a period of time where things are really tricky and people had to cope in a certain way. And obviously at the time they thought that was the best way. And now we know that obviously a lot of the evidence suggests that you are going to need to talk about your feelings if your mental health is going to be kept stable. So I think within society there are lots and lots of different people that are raising awareness of mental health in a way that haven't been in the public before. And that's fantastic, because the more normalised it is, as in more people are talking about it as if like they would talk about like a physical illness, you know, like it really shouldn't be any different. I guess the only difference with a physical illness is there's usually an end point to it, as in you're either going to get better or not. Whereas with mental health, it can be trickier. It can be a longer term thing. So I think there is still a lot of stigma in schools, and lots of people that I've connected with on Twitter that have, you know, tell me horrendous things about leadership teams, just blatantly ignoring their doctor's notes, or you know, just saying really patronising things to them, like, you know, like, have you tried yoga, or you know, like, oh, like, everyone has really bad times of the year, like now, like when it gets a bit dark, everyone's feeling a bit sad, like completely missing the point, and throwing sympathy in bucket loads, but not actually trying to understand what it feels like to be that person. So I would like to think that it is changing within schools, and I know it definitely is for students, because of kind of how the curriculum is changing. I think there needs to be more work done with teams of adults talking about mental health in schools.
Yeah, yeah. The case studies that are in the book, I really enjoyed those. Were they based on real people, or?
Some were based on real people, some were based on things that I'd made up, things that I'd kind of heard through Twitter or through different other websites, I guess. And what's quite useful about giving case studies is it's likely that that is going to be someone in your school. So the point of me writing them was to get you to stress less about what to say and how to be with that person, because, you know, there are some quite typical situations that will happen with people's mental health in life generally, and that is just often amplified by being in such an intense environment like a school. You know, like, I think it's quite tricky in schools, if, you know, if you were working somewhere where you could just sit quietly for the day and you were struggling but not actually having to interact with many people, that could be manageable. But the fact is that you're having to go into a school, you're having to put on that teacher mask all day long. That just isn't going to be manageable if you are struggling yourself. So yeah, the case studies I wrote about were just really to give leaders just practical ideas about what to say and what to do, really, because I think a lot of it comes from people worrying that they're going to say or do something to make it worse somehow, that, you know, like, if you ask about someone's mental health, they're going to cry and be off sick forever. Actually, being brave enough to have that conversation in the first place, even if they're not going to open up to you immediately, you being brave enough to ask them is kind of reaching out that branch and saying, look, you know what, things are really tricky and I totally respect if you can't talk about it right now, but I'm here for you and here's the space if you need it.
Would you say then that the book's aimed more towards leaders in schools, or do you think that teachers might find it useful?
It's a tricky one, because I think I didn't want to just make it for leaders in the schools. Reality is, they're the ones that are going to be more likely to have conversations with people about mental health. Lots of the book was about how kind of the cultural change in a school with regards to mental health can come from anyone really that cares enough. And I think that leadership teams of schools need to be open to the fact that lots of people in schools might have, you know, lots of experience working with people that have been struggling with their mental health, or, you know, had family members they needed support. So actually, it's about leadership teams being brave enough to have faith in people that they could actually start something that would be really meaningful. And it's about anyone that wants to buy into it having the opportunity to, because when we did our mental health first aid course at our school, there was a real range of staff. Like, it wasn't just leaders, it was, you know, librarians, it was school nurses, it was people that just are working with children day to day, but had an interest in it as well. And I think that's really important, that staff are getting as many opportunities to do kind of meaningful training sessions about it as possible. And that doesn't have to be expensive, you know, there's lots of online things that you can access even for free. But it's about talking about it as if it's as important as anything else that you'd be doing in terms of teaching and learning, I guess.
So how do we buy the book then? Is it out yet?
So it is going to be out on the 21st of December, so just in time for Christmas. And it's available, obviously, from Amazon, but all of the main bookshops will be able to stock it for you. If you follow me on Twitter, there'll be links to other articles and extracts from the book kind of as we're leading up to the release, because it's really important that people have got support from September, really. The only reason it wasn't out in September was because Corona managed to push it back, which is very annoying. The whole point is that I'm aware that staff are going to potentially be struggling in September because everything is so different. So I'll be writing a few kind of extracts and things on Twitter to help people, hopefully, so that they can settle in and hopefully have a happy start of term.
Yeah, I think the things I liked about it was that it was, like you said, this one stop for these are the different types of mental illness, these are the symptoms, yeah. these are the treatments. That was quite nice. I liked that bit.
Yeah, I think it's really important, because I think if you're not familiar with mental health as kind of a topic and you haven't had any experience of it, and you know, you just don't know, people don't, there could be situations where you just haven't encountered it really as an adult, I guess, or people haven't wanted to talk about it, which is slightly different. So I just started the book by talking through kind of the four main mental ill health, so anxiety, depression, PTSD and OCD. And it was really important to do that, because I think the signs and symptoms that you need to look out for in your colleagues will vary slightly depending on the type of mental ill health they're experiencing. So within kind of that first bit, there is the signs and symptoms to look out for, kind of possible treatment options that are available. And again, it will be slightly different depending on the type of illness and the type of treatment in terms of either medication or therapy or other things that people could do if they're struggling with that particular condition. It's really important. And then there's so many fantastic resources out there from like charities like Mind and things like that, where it just is like a help sheet that people can use to have a look, identify things. Because I think if you're struggling, it's really important for people sometimes to be able to kind of place it within framework of advice that's already out there. So, you know, there are going to be overlapping symptoms between all four of those mental health conditions, but it's about how you can go to specific support. And in each of those kind of four criteria, I'd given like how it feels to live with that condition. I think that's really important, because again, it's about that whole empathy thing. Is, you know, you can read about it objectively and go, God, that would be really horrible to have, you know, OCD and have to worry about those things all the time. But giving that how it feels kind of extract is really important, I think, because it gives people a deeper understanding about what is actually going on kind of behind the scenes, as it were. Because, you know, if someone's got OCD, your perceptions of that will be, oh, they're a right bean freak, and you know, they're just really funny about things having to be a certain way in their classroom. But actually, when you start to think about how it's affecting them on a day-to-day basis, it's much deeper than that. And the more that you understand about it, the more you are going to be able to kind of support people in the right way, I guess.
This couldn't really come at a better time, could it, considering that we're probably going to find that more people will be struggling with anxiety, will be struggling, you know, going back to teaching in this strange new world. I think something that's kind of on the back of my mind is that, well, I've not taught properly since March, and will I even be able to teach? I've started to have anxiety dreams already. So I think just being able to look out for our colleagues and think carefully about the things that we say to them and the things that we're looking out for is going to be more important than ever in this next
episode. And I think it's just about not being scared to ask, because you're not going to make it worse. Like, you can't make it worse. Like, not, there is nothing worse than having to keep that secret inside you and not now to share it with someone. So the worst thing you can do is to just go, oh, do you know what, they're having a funny day, or yeah, like, it's a bit stressful at the moment. Like, because it is going to be stressful, because things are different and people are having to think about how they do their job in a different way, and that's always going to be stressful. The only thing that will mean that everyone will kind of survive this strange period is realizing that there are some things that are going to be similar for lots and lots of people, like, you know, the fact that they're having to move classrooms, or the fact that they're not going to be able to go near the children the way they have been. That's similar, but it's about how much kind of capacity for change. No, that's not even a sentence, talking crap. So I think it's really important that we are, you know, encouraging staff to look after themselves. By that, I don't mean doing yoga if that isn't the right thing for you. I mean, you know, if you need to read a trashy fiction novel, if you need to listen to some music really loudly, if you need to go and do, you know, an exercise class or whatever works for you. But it's about not being ashamed of talking about that in school, because I think, like, in some schools there's such a pressure to, like, get results and talk about marking all the time. And actually, like, when there's a school that has got the right culture towards mental health, leaders will be talking about other things other than results, spreadsheets and data. Like, they will be talking about, you know, how are you, like, you know, it should be part of a line management meeting, you know, how are you feeling, like, as in asking genuinely, not, are you all right? Here you go, here's a spreadsheet of work that you need to do. It needs to actually be like, you know, how are you coping with the changes that are going on right now? Because it is tricky, like, I get that. And it's about, you know, showing that it is okay to be vulnerable as a leader. Because I think that actually that is how leaders get respect, isn't it? They don't get respect for being really good at doing spreadsheets. They get respect for being human and for being able to say, do you know what? Yeah, like, there was a time in my life when it was really tricky for me. And these are the sorts of things that help me. Might not help you, but this is just what I went through. And kind of going through, just making it feel more normal, basically.
Well, thank you very much. I've got to say, I really enjoyed the book. I thought it was really useful. And I think that, like I said before, it can really come up at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Amy.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Nimmer's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nimmer's Netter, just talking to teachers.